Hey, this is Frank Todaro,
otherwise known as Starscream.
And you're listening to the Geekcast Radio Network.
This is your episode anyway, so you're going to be doing all the heavy lifting. I'm not. I'm just here to host.
Well, doesn't the host do all the heavy lifting?
No, the host, when it's other people's topics that people want to come on and talk about, the host does the intro, the outro, the editing, the publishing, all of the other stuff.
Jesse, you really haven't done podcasts with people in a long time. The host never did the heavy lifting.
Oh, please. 13 years of Transformers comics, you ought to know better.
Is this like the pre-show? Is that why we're recording this?
Yes.
All right.
Just so I can have blackmail later.
Can this be in the podcast?
Doesn't usually have to be, but
put it at the end for ruining everything. No, anyway.
Well, I can put that at the end for ruining everything. Wah, 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 wah.
You're listening to the Geekcast Radio Network. Unleash the geek in you.
This is Geekcast Radio, episode 299. I am, of course, TFGO and Mike. Joining me is Jesse, a.k.a. Matrix Prime. Hello, sir.
Oh, hello, everyone.
And also joining us is that Charlie Brown adult voice. It's Ryan, the uneven flow of Nightbeat. Hello, sir.
Wow.
How are you?
Wow, so you were not okay with insulting Jesse in the previous open to the point that you removed it, but you're okay with insulting me. That's fantastic. Hey, what are we talking about today, Mr. Host?
The boredom of board games.
I mean, they used to be boring before they got a lot better.
Yes. So we have four topics here tonight. This was an idea that Jesse wanted to do with the three of us. And
I don't know if that's true.
Well, okay. Well, maybe you didn't want to do it with me, but
yeah, definitely not after you
said
insulted
to
him.
Me, yeah, you said to me that you wanted to talk about board games.
Well, Ryan also commented when he was back on Twitter and said, hey, yeah, we should talk about this sometime. So I'm like, yeah, all right.
Yeah, that was before the world went to even more anyway. But yes, board games. So we have four overall topics here. Designer board games, what are they and how do they compare to regular board games? You want to give that definition you found and modified, Jesse?
Oh, I got to give the definition now? Okay.
Hey, I just gave the top.
All right, everyone. So what is a designer board game? So the best definition I could find online is that it's a less widely published, sold, and marketed board game. It usually costs more than mass market board games, which can result in an increase in the component quality. Usually, but not always, has more intricate rules than mass market board games, and it's often found in comic and dedicated board game shops. Though, due to their game popularity, do show up in mass market stores now, such as Target, for example.
Interesting. And I feel like everybody's definition of these is going to be a little different. So, for example, the page you used is from fun.com. And yeah, it's not a bad breakdown. You know, it starts with, and I guess that's sort of our next bit, is when they started. They have the Royal Game of Ur from the 31st century BC, which is one of the oldest board games ever created. Actually, I think it is the oldest. Yeah, it is. So
yeah, it is.
At least on record, anyway, presuming there weren't games of tic-tac-toe in caves. who knows? But
wouldn't that technically be a cave drawing, not a board game, since you draw it on the wall?
I guess. So I feel like everybody's definition of this is going to be different, and they give different ages and the like. So, for example, I don't really consider something like Monopoly a designer board game. This is to me. Obviously, it's going to be different for everybody. But to me, the current crop of designer board games are based around a level of strategy versus the levels of randomness that the board games had when we were growing up. Mm-hmm. Monopoly is one of the best examples. You can set up your strategy that, okay, I really want to get Boardwalk and Park Place, or I want to own the Baltic and Mediterranean stuff and put hotels on them cheap and early, that kind of thing. But if the dice don't go in your favor, you can end up not owning enough properties of anything by the end of the game.
Yes.
And that to me is an example of it's board game design more based around randomness, and it's a little hard to come up with a strategy for them.
Yes. And also in my research, trying to figure all of this out with this designer board game stuff, surprisingly difficult, even though I put the terms into Google. I don't know what the first designer board game was and what the story is behind it.
Well, I mean, like I said, everybody's opinion on that is going to vary.
Yeah.
It, you know, to me, the first example of sort of a designer board game is more in the Renaissance era of Settlers of Catan in 96, or even going a little further, something like Twilight Struggle.
Yep. Yeah, it's definitely more recent. What is your definition for it, Jesse?
I mean, didn't I just give it to you?
Yeah.
No, I'm saying, like, what is your opinion of what the first... listening.
But yeah, do you have an extension or anything of that, or anything you'd add to it or take away personally?
I don't know that I would add anything or take away based on what you just explained. I mean, I would definitely agree that the Monopoly is not within that realm of designer board games. I mean, when we're talking about price and that definition there, right? Obviously, there are extravagant versions of Monopoly, but the rule set for Monopoly doesn't change, right? You can buy these solid gold versions of your Monopoly pieces.
Do you still have the Transformers Monopoly?
I never had that, no.
Oh, really?
Really?
Yeah, I had it, but I sold it a while ago for...
Oh, okay. So since Ryan brought this up, and this is actually...
What? It's a room thing. Also, man,
it's a current event thing.
For that thing.
Well, right, but it's also a current event thing. So there was Transformers Monopoly. Coming soon from Hasbro is Beast Wars Monopoly.
Yeah, so the problem...
Steve and I just...
The problem is I don't want to play Monopoly anymore. So the board... So I'm just going to be blunt, and this is not to offend anybody, but a lot of the board games we're going to get into, frankly, are better than Monopoly. I mean, there's a lot more mechanics involved, and that's another thing I'd kind of add to my definition is that there's more intricate mechanics with a lot of these, and we'll get into it later. But for example, I remember when I played the first of what I would consider to be a designer board game in this, and it blew me away. It plays more like a video game in terms of the complexity, but also in terms of speed. So one of the other knocks against some of the older ones, like Monopoly and the others, is it takes you 3 hours to play a game. You know, is there a game of Monopoly that doesn't end with somebody just getting bored and either walking away or flipping the table deliberately so they don't have to play anymore?
So that's the interesting thing with the history of board games and how far we've come with them to get to the designer games is that Parker Brothers in the olden days and everything else, they were making family board games. That's why Monopoly is 2 to 10 players. So you can have the entire family fighting over who gets board.
God, can you imagine a 10-player game of Monopoly? That sounds like hell.
I think the highest I played was 4 players when I was a kid. But the thing of some of these, you know, classic games is that it wasn't about, like, back then we didn't have the culture that we have now where you could play Candyland and have fun, or you could play Clue and, you know, have flames on the side of your face like Mrs. White, or you could play Mousetrap, even though I hated Mousetrap.
Took too long to set up.
Yeah, took too long to set up. Yeah, yeah,
exactly. Commercials made it look way cooler than it was. Anywho.
Absolutely. You know, you can play these games. I think, personally, the first quote-unquote designer one, like the first board game I ever saw and heard of, I was like, wait, what is that? It was Risk. Because Risk was so different to me than anything else at the time.
Fair. I mean, Risk is another one that it takes a long time and there's an awful lot of randomness associated with it.
Yeah.
It's a lot more difficult to make your own luck, but yeah, it's definitely an older one. I mean, it's existed. Oof, God. It's been around for a while.
Yes. Yes, it has.
When did it come? 1959. Yeah.
Yep. 59. And that's another thing why I will link this infographic from this fun website in show notes in the post. I love the history and the breakdown of years and where it's like Milton Bradley buys McLaughlin Brothers and then Hasbro buys everybody else throughout the, like Hasbro owns gaming at this point. When I think of Milton Bradley, I think of Parker Brothers, I think of a few other things, but like, yeah, now it's like you want board games, you go to Hasbro.
So it's everybody's first what they would consider designer board game, because I sure as hell remember mine.
Well, what was yours?
Yeah. Oh, all right. Well, fine. mine now hits close to home. Probably a little too much. It is unfortunately pandemic.
Okay.
Oh, no.
The irony. But I remember it well. So I was at the first Ottawa Comic Con, and they had an area set aside for board games. This was before it kind of got super popular. And
so what year are we talking?
Became premium. So we're now talking 2000 and I want to say 11.
Okay.
I believe was the inaugural year. And yeah, it's just... We saw it, and the person I was with, Mark, who's a friend of mine, and we would end up playing and going to board game nights together after this, but we just sort of asked, like, what's the most popular and that kind of thing, and they had somebody there kind of quickly explain some of the rules. Mark had some idea of how to play it. For anyone who doesn't know, and I'd be surprised because this is one of the big ones, but Pandemic came out in 2007. It's from Z-Man Games. It is the first, I think, of the Matt Leacock designed games in which it's cooperative. And so there's not, in this one at least, there's no real player versus player aspect. Everyone's working together to try to cure the pandemic, unlike real life. And it blew me away. The amount of mechanics and everything else to it. So you can, there are different roles everybody chooses and you sort of come up with a strategy as the virus spreads and you try to eliminate it, eventually finding a cure and wiping out the virus. And it just, yeah, we played a game fairly quickly because, in my opinion, board games were still a 3-hour, or if you're playing Risk, maybe even more than a day, you know, sort of thing, get together. And yeah, I remember it really well. And after that, I mean, I went back, or we would start playing some of the other big ones. I didn't know Ticket to Ride before then. I want to say it was kind of next. Played Catan a little bit after, and yeah, just kind of went from there.
Yeah, I am all way above you guys as far as the board game. Like, I stopped playing board games right before I graduated high school in 1999. I don't remember the last board game I played in the last 20 years.
Yeah, there weren't any good ones before 1999. That's why.
Funny.
What?
Funny guy.
Oh, I'm sorry. You thought that was a joke? I mean, the only one I would consider sort of a designer board game, quote unquote, before then is probably Catan. And
yeah,
Catan is a formula that has been improved by subsequent versions of itself significantly.
What about you, Jesse?
So, I'm trying to think here. So the one game that I still own from the 90s, it's a Milton Bradley game. Which someone's looking to bring back is the Omega Virus. Would you consider that one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, there's
a lot of randomness in that, obviously. Yeah. But it's also kind of a unique game. I guess I haven't seen anything similar to that I guess kind of before or since. But if we're talking about, you know, sort of modern games, mine is along the same lines as yours, Ryan. It was a Matt Leacock game. I think it came out just after pandemic. It was Forbidden Island.
Forbidden Island, yeah.
Which is a simpler version almost of Pandemic. The theme behind it is quite a bit different, but it uses sort of the same mechanics as Pandemic. It's also a little bit simpler in terms of just kind of overall gameplay. I picked that up just kind of out of the blue on New Year's Eve 2013. the then ex and I were going to a New Year's party. So we were like staying in a hotel and we needed to kill some time before the party kind of started. So we popped over to the local mall, picked up this game, just on a whim, looked at it, looked interesting. So we played it. I think the first game, so I think it's up to four players, I think is, yeah, 2 to 4 players.
Yes.
It takes about 30 minutes, it says. So there were two of us playing. It took probably about the 30 to 40 minutes to play it, a little bit longer the first time because you got to learn the rules. But once we played through the first game, we were hooked, and I think we played it for the next 3 hours while we were waiting for the party to start. So I think that was my first modern quote unquote designer board game.
It's a solid game, and I'll say this: like one thing with the Matt Leacock ones, they're fairly simple when you get down to it overall, even Pandemic Legacy, which is a little more complicated, but they're great for teaching people all of sort of the modern mechanics. Like there's so much stuff that's used in Forbidden Island, Forbidden Desert, Pandemic that are all used in other games.
Yep.
And I still remember, so one of the next games I would end up playing that's a lot different, but you can still take a lot from Pandemic, was Betrayal on the House of the Hill. And it's a very different board game, but those same mechanics really kind of served us. And yeah, there's so many that we've played since then that are different, but that, I guess, is another thing. Like the mechanics I find are very similar from game to game, but different enough they feel completely different of the current crop of designer games. Basically the ones since 2000,
right?
Or 95 or 96, I'd say. And the sort of, and yeah, there were ones before then that have happened, but they're all sort of, they've all sort of in reprint now because nobody played them back then. It was really, it was really sometime in the 2000s, around that like 2005 to 2010 range, probably with the advent of YouTube and everything else coming up big, that board games or these games started to take off.
Yeah, because like I said before, you had all the family games, or like you had the Saris and the Troubles and the this and the that, and it was all about having, that's the transition between classic board games and the modern designer game, is that designers wanted to create their own games and make their own rules and do their own things, and whether they were working with a company or not, that's fine. Go ahead and do that and create your own game. And one of the creator-owned games that I will talk about is not necessarily a board game. It's one of the card games. It's called The Long Con. This is a card game of conventioning. This is done by Thomas Zoller, who did he's a comic writer and artist. He did Love and Capes and all that entails with that series. But in his webtoon series called Warning Label, the female character in that, Danielle, she was creating this board game or this card game about putting together your own comic convention. And it's called The Long Con. You can buy it right now for $26 at Target. It's actually really fun. I haven't played it, but from what I've seen and what I've seen other people, it's the deck building game of conventioneering, where players competing to be the first to build the best convention. The inspiration for the game comes from the comic, as I said, Warning Label. You know, so, you know, you figure out, you know, how to put your own convention together for those of us that can't actually afford to do it. And, you know,
so there's definite negatives with these two, which I'll get into before we get into sort of some of our favorite overall games. I will say this about the designer board games. If you have a negative first experience, and I'll explain some of those, the first time you play some of them, it sucks, and you will not want to go back to them. So the two examples I always use, so I mentioned Betrayal and House of the Hill. I don't like that game, and the reason is that when we first played it, Mark and I and the other two people drew what is commonly regarded, apparently, as the worst scenario. So when you're setting up, you sort of randomly choose a scenario, and we happen to get the worst one, which was sort of just a random sort of escape out of the hill, or out of the house on the hill.
Right.
And it sucked. It was not all that much fun. And so ever since then, I've played it since then, and I've had some good runs, but yeah, it just left a bad taste in my mouth. And then the other one is the Firefly board game, which I hate with the passion of a thousand fiery suns. We took all this time to set up, and it was the first time I was playing. I was playing with a now ex, and we were playing with two other people, including the person who owned the game. Took all this time to set up everything else. We're trying to play. I'm on maybe the third turn, trying to get the mechanics and stuff down and memorize how to move, and there's fuel consumption and blah, blah, blah. And the guy who owns the game finishes it, and we're done. Like, he destroyed everyone else at the game who he was supposed to be sort of teaching. And all three of us essentially agreed, like, yeah, no, I think we'll skip a second game. And I never played it since then, and I have nowhere to do. That is a great way to completely kill somebody's enthusiasm or interest in a game, to just completely annihilate the players.
Yeah, I mean, the whole point of, other than, oh, here, this is a new board game, I'd like to have you play with us, here, read the instructions. Other than you reading the instructions on how to play the game, the whole point is to teach the person that doesn't know how to play, and not just destroy them outright because they don't know how to play it.
And it's also supposed to be fun. That's the other thing.
Yeah, like, too.
When you don't know the game and somebody just completely wrecks you at it, it's not a lot of fun. It's like if you were in an arcade and you go to play Tekken 3 or something, and you're playing against one of the world champions, and the round lasts 4 seconds.
Yeah, that's never.
I will say that while they can leave a bad taste in your mouth if they are bad, don't let that dissuade you from trying other games. So, for example, I'm a big Gears of War fan. So I've got all the video games. I have a friend group where we would play the Horde mode in that for, like, you know, hours on end. Haven't done it in quite a while, but really still love the Horde mode in that. So I purchased the Gears of War board game thinking, oh, this would be great, right? Because it's another cooperative game. And since playing the Forbidden Island, I kind of seek out the cooperative type of games because my wife and I now, we both enjoy playing board games, and we both like the cooperative aspect to the, you know, to the genre of game. So I purchased the Gears of War board game. She also was one of the people that was in the friend group that was playing Horde mode with us in Gears of War. We sat down to try to play that. 60 minutes later, okay, between the setup and trying to read the rules, we hadn't even started the game. So, I mean, if you've ever seen that game, it's got a really thick rule book, and it's very hard to understand. There's multiple card decks in that game, and the card decks, they control the AI for the enemy that you're fighting. They help control your movement and things like that. And it's just, there's a lot to learn, a lot to remember, and the manual is really hard to refer back to. So I know rule sets can be off-putting, rule books can be off-putting, but don't let that dissuade you from seeking out other better games that might be out there.
Yeah, there's a few like that. And I find, too, one thing that can help, potentially, it depends on what kind of learner you are. There's also YouTube videos, like Let's Play videos, or how it's played if you're starting out with stuff is a fantastic YouTube channel, for example, that gets a lot of love, but they do a really good job, or he does a really good job of explaining or showing off how to play some of these. So yeah, there's the complex games, and then there's the over complex games.
Yeah. And then there's the ones we just, at least we used to love. I mean, you know, I don't know. I always liked Monopoly because it was just different than, say, I mean, we all grew up with chess and checkers and Parcheesi and the Game of Life and how depressing that is now. You know, Clue and Candyland and everything else. And Monopoly just, to me, at the time when I was a kid in the 80s, just felt so different. I mean, technically, Candyland is kind of similar, but it really isn't.
I liked them growing up, but yeah. Now I have no urge to kind of go back to them. No, it's true. Well, if I'm going to go back to something that's in that style, for example, so I guess we'll start listing some of favorite games. If I have an urge for something in this sort of Monopoly style, ownership, that kind of thing, Ticket to Ride is it's a quicker alternative.
Yeah.
For example, or Monkey Koro is a really good kind of city builder / property owning thing that's different. That's kind of been eclipsed by its sequel now, but those are examples of that type of game. If I'm playing in a group, I really like a lot of the hidden role games. Shadowhunters was one of the first games I played of the hidden roles. And it's a lot of fun, and it's a quicker version of something like, say, Battlestar Galactica, which is fantastic, but A, takes a long time to play, and B, gets people phenomenally angry at each other, which can be a lot of fun, but one of my favorite memories of it was a game that I wasn't in, but I remember, like, hearing the table, couple tables down, actually, one person just screaming, "I am not a Cylon," complete with a bunch of expletives. And apparently they got spaced anyway, so.
Wow.
Because it's one of the mechanics. So hidden role games are games where there is somebody actively working against the group.
Yep.
Dead of Winter can be like that. For example, it's another popular one. So, yeah, those are interesting. And that's more, so Jesse mentioned, like, he likes the co-op games, so do I. But every once in a while, I like to play something with an antagonist. I don't know.
I keep going back to Monopoly only because Monopoly has basically monopolized themselves over the years. There is every kind of version of Monopoly that you can think of if you're a fan of it. I'm sure there's a Friends Monopoly, there's a Seinfeld Monopoly, there's, as we mentioned earlier, there's Transformers, and now there's going to be Beast Wars Monopoly.
You have to go back to it because you haven't played anything new since 1927, you said.
Ha, 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 funny. Funny guy. It's one of those things where just, I'm curious to see, like, I know what the main game of Monopoly is, and I'm curious to see how introducing the themes actually make it different.
I mean, do they, though?
Yeah, not really.
I do. I mean, I own a Back to the Future Monopoly, and it doesn't really change. I mean, the themes change, but the gameplay is essentially the same. That version of Monopoly does include quick play rules, which I think ends the game in 30 minutes, I think. So that does change the rule set a little bit. But it's still, I mean, it still feels like Monopoly as you're playing it.
Yeah, Transformers Monopoly was just, most of them are just, frankly, kind of cheap. Change the names and the graphics and we're done here. sort of thing.
In fact, if you want to play a good version of Monopoly, play Monopoly Deal, which is a card game, and you can end it in like 10, 15 minutes, I think.
Yeah. Or play Monkey Koro 1 or 2, or...
And what I'm getting out of all of this is, what the hell's the point of board games if you don't want to spend time with people playing the game?
Yeah, but you can also get in three really good games in the same time that'll take you to play one okay game of
True.
Monopoly or whatever. Like, Risk is a really good
yeah,
and fun game. I like Risk, don't get me wrong, but it's a hell of a lot more work to try to dedicate 4 hours a day or 2 days or whatever.
True.
To playing a game than it is to get a group of people together to play a game for an hour. And that's the other thing is, frankly, do you want to dedicate that much time to it? And a lot of the games I enjoy are shorter games. So some of my other favorite games, I really like stuff like Zombicide or Nemesis. And those are both longer games that take longer to set up and everything else. Not to mention they involve miniatures, et cetera, et cetera. But they're fun games. B, they have a relatively quick, like, finite ending. And it's still pretty easy to get together with a group of people to play them. And then you've got stuff like the legacy games, like Pandemic, for example, I mentioned was one of the first I remember that came out with a legacy game. And they're fun, but it's a pain in the ass to try to get people together week after week to play a game. The other issue I have with them is replayability is somewhat limited because on some of them, you literally have to destroy portions of the game. And I don't know if it's all of my video game playing or what, but I'm just not a big fan of that. I like being able to replay my stuff. Yeah. I think it's cool to get a sort of really neat kind of singular experience, but I don't know. If I pay $50 for a board game or something like that, I kind of want to be able to get more than one use out of it. Or what if I have more than one group of friends that wants to play it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I guess regarding the legacy game, so I've got this on. Are we like talking about our favorites now? Or are we just we're just shooting the shit here? Okay.
So Mike's going to bring up how whatever legacy game you played relates to Monopoly.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't know. Monopoly Legacy. Yeah. So regarding the legacy game, so I've also got all three seasons of Pandemic Legacy. The first one I played, I took it to work, and we were playing over lunch. There was a whole group of us in a previous position, a previous job. I took it to work and there was a whole group of us that were interested in playing board games. So we would typically play it over lunch. So I had relatively the same group of people. It was 4 to 5 people that were playing at the same time for Pandemic. So we burnt through season one pretty well. And while I would agree with you that I don't necessarily like destroying the things that I purchase, I look at it as though, right, if I'm going to go to a movie, for example, and the movie's like, I don't know what it is, what it costs for you to go. It's probably about 10, 12 bucks for me to go to like a matinee now, right? And that's like 2 hours maybe. Each playthrough of this game is roughly an hour, right? And with Pandemic, it's going over the course of like a year. So a year being 12 months, and you may play it anywhere from 12 to 24 times, depending on whether you succeed in the first time in the month or not. If you don't succeed the first time, right, you've got to replay that. If you fail a second time, you just move on to the next month. So it's anywhere between 12 to 24 playthroughs. But I, you know, I look at that as, right, it was about an hour long for us to play it. So anywhere from 12 to 24 hours. So $50 to $75, depending on where you purchase these games or how long they've been out. I can kind of justify that, at least personally. But that very first time you rip up a component or a piece, it's like, oh man, what am I doing here?
Yeah, I think so. Pandemic Legacy, A, you described pretty much kind of the best, I would say, scenario to play it in, right? Like a dedicated group that, in theory, you're presumably at work anyway. I would hope,
right?
Unless you've got other problems going on in your workplace.
Right.
But there's that, and then in terms of like the replayability, I think Pandemic Legacy is one of the better ones. God, now I can't remember the name of it. If it's Code Breakers, or there's one of them that is literally just you can only ever play through it once, and the replayability is tied to only the back end of the game, which is kind of less interesting than the front end of it. So
now what I will say about Pandemic, what I will say about the first season of Pandemic Legacy is that it kind of builds off from the original Pandemic, right? So the very first game of Pandemic Legacy, it's essentially regular Pandemic. So if you're a fan of Pandemic, I would highly recommend playing season one. Season two, I picked up, my wife and I played through it. So that was only two people. I think we were each playing two characters at a time. So technically four player, but again, it was just two of us. We liked that game okay. I didn't like it as much as the first one. And then we picked up the prequel that came out, which is called Season Zero. We haven't even gotten halfway through that game, and I actually have no desire to finish it. I'm not a fan of the story that's going on. I'm not a fan of the game mechanics that are in there. It's just not an overall fun game to play.
Ouch. Yeah, and that's one of the downsides of it, too, is with those, you can't just kind of sell them. So right. I've had board games that I didn't enjoy it. And I've ended up just selling it after a playthrough or two. And yeah, that's one of the other things. You can't just, you know, give it to friends or something like that.
Right.
Yeah.
But I love Pandemic so much that, right, so I've got the original, I've got all the legacy games. I've got some of the expansions for the original, which, you know, introduce new game mechanics, new characters, new goals to the mission that you're on. There's different variations of that. So like, I've also got Pandemic the Cure. So this is how much I like Pandemic. I've got Pandemic the Cure, which is like a dice version of the game.
Yeah, the Cure is interesting, and it's totally different than the others.
But right, it's got the same theme. It plays a little bit faster. There is some luck involved there because you're rolling dice now. I've got Pandemic Iberia, which is kind of a rethemed version of Pandemic. So I don't actually remember what you're doing in Iberia, but you're not trying to cure diseases in that particular one. But there's also Pandemic Cthulhu, Pandemic, is it Fall of Rome?
Pandemic Years of War.
I wish I would
know. Not yet.
And then there's also some offshoot ones where you can actually be the virus. I forget the name of that one. Yep. Contagion, Pandemic Contagion. Yep. So I've got that one. That one's completely different gameplay, not at all developed by Matt Leacock. Just uses the same theme. And then they've got some mini ones that are out. So there's Pandemic Hot Zones North America, Pandemic Hot Zones Europe. Same exact gameplay as regular Pandemic, but it's on a much smaller board. There's less diseases you're curing. There are a little bit, different gameplay mechanics. You can introduce some different things using some cards in there, but essentially it's the main Pandemic rules. So I've got quite a few versions of Pandemic.
Those I haven't played. So the last ones you listed with the miniatures and the like, I'll have to try that sometime. Cause yeah, I've always liked the games. I like the mechanics. I mentioned that before. I think Matt Leacock's a really good designer overall. I've played everything from his Firefighter game, which now, of course, I can't remember the name of. God, I'm getting old. This was so much easier, you know? Anywho.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, right. I liked it quite a bit. And, yeah, I mentioned, you know, Pandemic. I always have a soft spot for Pandemic because kind of what got me into it. And even when I play stuff that's completely different or much later on, like I'm playing Gloomhaven or stuff like that, I still feel like there's stuff I learned from Pandemic that,
yeah,
yep. You know, just from it being my first of those type of games, I guess.
It seems like if you're going to introduce a new set of people to the idea of designer board games, that's sort of the go-to.
Yeah, it's one of the best, I think.
And it seems like it's easy to kind of jump in. The rules aren't too complicated to teach someone, and it kind of gives them a good idea of kind of what a cooperative board game is like.
Yeah.
I guess looking at other things on my list here, so I've got Carcassonne, so that's a PvP. My wife really likes playing or really likes putting together puzzles, so she often kicks my ass in this game. But Carcassonne is essentially you draw tiles, you lay tiles down, you're trying to complete certain things. So you can complete a castle, you can complete roads, you can complete fields, things like that. In doing so, you're putting down these meeples that you have. So meeples are like little wooden characters or pawns, scoring points. And the more points you score, obviously, whoever scores the most would win the game. But yeah, you've got to draw these pieces, figure out where to place them on the board that you're creating, right? So the board's always constantly changing, different between every single game. But yeah, my wife usually wins in that one.
Carcassonne's, yeah. It's another one, by the way. Carcassonne's another one that's pretty important for other games, too, because you mentioned having the meeples and that kind of thing. Worker right. placement for a long time, which is kind of a basis of meeples and those type of games, was huge. I mean, there have been so many since then of like the worker placement sort of genre, and Carcassonne, in a lot of ways, even though it's not really a worker placement, kind right. of set the stage for them. It's similar mechanics.
Right. Well, yeah, it's sort of in that you place your pawn there, your meeple, and you don't really get it back until you right, you complete yeah. the thing you're trying to complete. So you're not actually getting a resource in that case, but yeah. And there's so many expansions to that. I think I've got like 5 or 6 of them, and there's numerous expansions to it. Another one of my favorites, which is a worker placement, is Lords of Waterdeep. So yes. I'm not a Dungeons and Dragons player at all, but I like the idea behind that. I like the theme behind that. And if you're kind of in the same boat as me, I would highly recommend Lords of Waterdeep.
I love it. Yeah. When I mentioned worker placement, it's the one I went to in my head immediately. And I know there's been a bunch since then, but yeah, I love it.
My wife usually beats me in that game too. So.
Yeah. I don't think I've won a game of it in my different groups. So, but I still have a lot of fun with it. It's one of those that I don't care that apparently I suck at it.
Yeah. I mean, and the gameplay is so simple, right? So you have a certain number of meeples you can play. You go through numerous rounds. You're putting your meeples out there just to gain resources. You're gaining resources to complete different quests. That simply means you're collecting enough resources in order to kind of pay it back into the quote unquote bank to complete the cards that you've got in your hand to gain points. So it's very simple in terms of gameplay and mechanic, but I just kind of like the idea around it, the theme behind it and everything.
Yeah, it just works. And you mentioned, you know, the D&D theme. You don't even need any sort of backstory or anything. Like, you don't need to know Dungeons and Dragons or any of this sort of similar things. You can just sit down and play it and have a good time yep. with it.
Now, also, there is an expansion for that as well called Scoundrels of Skullport, which I do own. But I find that when I do play this game, I'm not at all really playing with the expansion at all. I just kind of stick with the main game.
Very cool. Very cool. Meanwhile, I'm stuck in the 80s playing Knight Rider.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Minotaur.
I fooled you, didn't I?
Now, the last game I have yeah. on my list here. Sorry. Do you want to talk about this last game? The last game I got on my list, which is, I think, what prompted the discussion of having a podcast around this, is The Adventures of Robin Hood, which is a cooperative board game.
Yes.
Welcome to Sherwood.
That's silly. It couldn't be him.
Well, so I wanted to read a description of this really quick here. So it says, in England in 1193, I'm reading this from, this is shutupandsitdown.com, but it's, I think it's just the description for the game, from the, publisher. It says the county of Nottinghamshire suffers under the yoke of evil Prince John and his henchmen. Can Robin Hood and his companions escape the sheriff's guard and complete their adventures successfully? So it says, in the adventure of Robin Hood, players take on the role of Robin Hood and his companions, with the action taking place on a living board game with no set paths. The board changes over the course of each adventure, and the movement of the characters is handled via an innovative mechanism that uses different length wooden character pieces. Various actions and secrets are integrated into the game's levels and are revealed only in the course of the story. The game board, quote-unquote, remembers when players have already explored or found, and thanks to the special materials, the entire game can be set up and dismantled quickly. Instead of using cards as the author's Legends of Andor, the game tells the story of Robin Hood in a high-quality hardcover book, and depending on the decisions the players make, the story changes. So there is a branching mechanism within this game. So there are some, so my wife and I have played through this, and there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, there are 7 total campaigns that you play, but there are 2 of them we haven't played because we didn't take that branch within the game. So there is definitely replayability here. The game itself is kind of unlike anything I've played in other board games. So it was definitely a surprise to my wife and I. Again, it was something we just kind of bought on a whim, at a local comic shop. I hadn't seen it anywhere else before. Just came across it, was looking for cooperative games because that's what we like playing, and picked it up and absolutely fell in love with it. Once you kind of finish the game, obviously you can go back through it and choose the other path if you want, but there are also additional rules in here. Like if you're playing it beyond the first time, so it does increase some of the difficulty, I guess. We haven't played through it for a second time yet, but I know there is rules in here to kind of change it up a little bit as you play through it for a second time. So Ryan, you said you played it. I guess, what are your thoughts on it?
I like it a lot. It's another good sort of good co-op game with a bunch of different, it's not very old, by the way. When did you first start playing it? Just out of curiosity. And you just saw it in the store? Or? Yeah.
Yeah. So we saw it, it was earlier this year.
Yeah. Okay. Cause yeah, it only came out last year. So
yeah. Yep.
It's a really good co-op game. It's not super tough to set up. So the game that it reminds me of, and I'll just mention that, it reminds me a fair amount of Robinson Crusoe, if you've ever played it.
Okay.
No? All right. Same sort of idea. It's a co-op sort of game that changes as you play it. The difference here is Robinson Crusoe takes probably about, I want to say twice the time. It's kind of Gloomhaven-esque, like in terms of how long it takes to set up and play and everything else. There's a whole ton of pieces. It was one of the first games I can remember somebody made like an alternate box to hold all the stuff. Robin Hood is a lot easier to kind of pick up and play. Mechanics are really good. It's another one of those games that, I said it earlier, it's really deep. There's a ton of different things you can do and you can decide to do in it. And yet it's still so simple. Like, anybody can play it. And I really like the inclusion of the storybook and stories. Like, there's so few games that do that.
Yeah, what I also liked was, so you would think this would have some complicated rule book. But you can actually not read any rules and just kind of jump right in and start playing. And that's what the game actually encourages you to do for that first campaign, which was kind of surprising. And I'm like, I don't know what the hell we're supposed to do. How are we going to do this? And, you know, it just walks you through it. And it's pretty simple.
And it's a huge board, but it's like, it's pretty simple to figure out, even though you want a good sized table for it. But
yeah, so I've actually sprawled it out on the floor here, and I measured it right before we hopped on here. So it's just over 3 feet wide and just under 2 foot tall in terms of game board.
Wowzers.
Yeah, it's large. And you put it together like almost like a puzzle, but, you know, not an actual puzzle, obviously. But it's a neat idea, and it's a good way to store it and everything, so...
No, but because I do love this game and there is replayability to it, the one thing I was not really a fan of when it comes to the board itself is, at least on mine, I think this might be an issue that they fixed or addressed in a current run of the game, is that, so you've got to peel up certain pieces of the board. And in doing so, at least on mine, it starts to peel up the actual coating on the pieces you're pulling up. So it's actually damaging the cardboard.
Oh, damn.
So at some point, right, depending on, you know, the number of times you've played this, I could easily see where pieces are ruined. But like I said, I think they've addressed that, at least based on what I've read on like Board Game Geek, that they may have addressed that on current prints of the game.
Yeah, so that's one thing. I'll sort of transition into some of mine. I play a lot of games with cards and stuff, and a lot of the board games we listed have like small cards and that kind of thing. And so, yeah, I tend to sleeve them now. I used to not, but if you start playing something a lot, holy cow, do they get worn fast. I mean, part of it's the quality of the cards. They're actually pretty good quality,
right.
And, you know, they're well sort of painted or colored on, et cetera, et cetera. So it doesn't take long to wear them out with your big, fat, grubby hands, if you're me. But, but yeah, I mean, some of my favorites. So I'm going to avoid, you know, Terraforming Mars and Scythe and some of the big ones. There's one big one I'll mention, but some of my favorites... Merchants and Marauders comes to mind. So Merchants and Marauders is a Z-Man Games game, 2 to 4 players, and you kind of play it really however you want. The negative side of it is it's a 3-hour game, but you can be whatever you want. You can be a pirate, you can be a merchant, you can just kind of explore whatever. You're just trying to get quote-unquote glory points through, like, doing missions, completing rumors, just getting gold, pulling off trades, and you can upgrade your ship. There's different captains you play as. I really like it. It's a lot of fun. It's very sort of different, with the exception of something like Seafall, which came later, which is kind of the same idea. But I always liked Merchants and Marauders a little more. Let's have the expansions for it. So.
Can I ask a question before you go to your next one?
Yes.
So we've got a 3-year-old, so we don't typically have time to play a 3-hour game unless it's late in the evening. Yeah. And then I'm like, so, and I really like the idea. Well, I really like pirate themed things in general. So movies, games, things like that. I have played a pirate themed game before. I don't remember the name of it. It was like an auction type game. But that aside, are there any other pirate games you can recommend that are maybe shorter in time that aren't 3 hours long?
Oh God. No. Cause the problem is, Seafall. No, I mean, to be honest, like, you know, I mentioned Seafall. Seafall's still a 2 to possibly 3 hour game, depending on how many people are playing and miniatures. Somebody else, if there's anybody that listens to this, can probably think of one. But yeah, I haven't played one. I'm sure they exist. You know, but yeah, this one has miniatures and that kind of thing. So that's one of the reasons. It takes a little bit to set up. The board is also fairly large. You've got an actual, like, chest you use to store gold, that kind of thing. So
you've got a picture pulled up on Board Game Geek, and it looks pretty intricate.
It is, yeah. It's a fun game, but yeah, it's one you need time. I'm going to go back. So another game I like, and believe it or not, it's not just because of the theme of it. Deep down, I like Catan, but it's super-duper flawed. The randomness, I think, turns a lot of people off of it because their entire turns, you can spend 3 or 4 turns doing nothing because your dice don't come up of one of the things or areas you own. So I play a fair amount of the Star Trek Catan, and the reason I like it is it adds identity/ability cards. So even if you don't roll whatever one of your places is that you need for the resources, you can still do things on your turn and still actually get things done. Plus, it speeds up the game immensely. I find it's just a huge, 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 huge improvement of the base game because the base game takes too damn long.
Absolutely. Is that the case with just that version of Catan, or is that also with other variations that are also kind of standalone?
I think there's other variations of it that have cards or identities with them, too. It's just Trek was one of the first ones. And after I bought it, I don't really feel the need to get the other ones because, honestly, like, our games last so much shorter. I mean, it went from, like, a... God, I remember. Some of these games of Catan can last forever. It went from, like, a 2-hour game a lot of times, or 1.5 hours or so, to easily under 60 minutes. And what's nice is, too, there's actually an expansion which gives you a set board, and you flip it over and there's a different set board. So it even limits the setup time to basically nothing. So yeah, big fan of that. The setup time, by the way, one of the biggest sort of things that keeps me from playing some of these games, like some of them I really like, but it's just a pain in the ass to set them up and play them and everything else. Anyway.
Video games are much easier.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of the things I like. One of the reasons I like the current crop, though. Getting into some of the card games, I know one of the things I mentioned, I'd try to avoid popular ones, but I will mention Flux, which is a good sort of party game, good like kind of warm-up game. There's so many different versions of it you can play. There's probably a Gears of War Flux. You look that up.
I've looked. There isn't.
Well,
I do own a variation.
I'm surprised there isn't a Back to the Future Flux.
You know, just go back to talking about Monopoly.
Funny. funny.
Wow. Anyway. All right. I mean, the last one I'll mention quickly, you knew I was going to bring it up at some point, Marvel Champions, which is a co-op card-based game. It is huge. It's licensed, which is usually a shot against it, but it's well-designed. It's by Fantasy Flight Games. It's co-op. You can play solo as well, though. It's really meant for 1 to 4 players, although it shines best with 2 to 3, but single-player solo is still quite easy to play. I don't know. I find it a lot of fun. There are Marvel heroes in it that I'm not a big fan of that I play a fair amount because they're actually fun to play. There's a lot of them that play completely different from each other. You have different aspects. You can just play with the decks the game gives you when you buy them. Or you can set up your own decks. There's a really good website that compiles people's decks they've done, and I like to kind of build based on that and sometimes swap a card or two out. But yeah, it's a really good one, and it's fantastic if you're a fan of Marvel. It plays fairly quickly, especially once you get the rules down or watch some Let's Plays or something like that. And yeah, that's kind of the last one I wanted to mention.
So you can buy booster packs for that then?
So you buy the hero packs and you get a pre-built deck for that hero based in one of the aspects. Yep. So you have your hero and your hero has 15 cards that let them do things related to themselves. So for Captain America, one of his cards is his shield. One of his other cards lets him throw his shield and hit multiple enemies. It's stuff like that. And then you have aspect cards, which you choose. And the aspects are aggression, which is pretty obvious. Justice, which involves sort of thwarting the villain's schemes versus just attacking him outright. And then there's protection, which involves protecting the other members of your group. And then the last one, there is leadership, which is you can throw out allies who are other Marvel heroes and you toss them out and... usually, you just make them get killed for you.
So I think I've asked
you. You toss them out.
I think I've asked you this on Twitter, but how does this compare? I don't remember what your answer was. How does this compare or contrast to like Sentinels of the Multiverse?
So I have Sentinels of the Multiverse, and I'm a big fan of that. Sentinels is a little bit more simple, I would say. So with Sentinels of the Multiverse, really good hero-based game, same sort of idea. You team up against the villain. With it, you get an action and a power per turn, essentially. So you play a card, and then you can do an action or use a power or whatever. Champions lets you, in theory, do more in a turn. You have different cards. Your resource to pay for those cards is other cards. It's printed on them. So in theory, you can do more in a turn and you have more choice in terms of what you do. That's the big difference, I would say. It plays a little bit quicker, I'd say.
Okay.
But I really like Sentinels.
Very cool. Very cool. Anything else we want to say about board games, gentlemen?
Board games.
I mean, there's a whole other topic that we could discuss, but it's going to go more than a lot of time when we sat here.
This can be part one.
You're supposed to go off your lunch. That's why I was hurrying up.
Yeah, I was like, wait a second. Yeah, so this can be part one in a new series of board game episodes.
Jesse has to go play his Pandemic Legacy game with his coworkers at work instead of working, just in case his bosses are listening.
I thought that's why everybody's working from home now. Oh, wait, sorry. That's too real world. All right. Oh, boy. Next time around, we've got episode 300 coming up. I don't know what we're doing with that. No clue. I know Steve's going to be on it, but I'm not sure what we're doing. We're going to take a quick ad break because that's how we sadly have to pay for things around here, and we'll be back after this.
Because the world needs another movie podcast.
The GeekCast Radio Network presents for your listening pleasure, The Cinema Geek.
Hosted by Amanda, Kevin, Matt, and Dan.
Each week we dive headfirst in the landscape of movies as we discuss movie news,
play movie games,
go in-depth on reviews,
and even have a top 10 countdown or two.
Also, don't miss our director retrospective series, where we review noted directors' movies film by film.
Bottom line is, if you love movies and love podcasts, you need to experience The Cinema Geeks.
You can find us on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, or GeekCastRadio.com.
Hello, geeks and geekettes! Looking for a podcast that covers a vast array of topics? Then check out Altered Geek Unleashed, where we discuss our thoughts on this week's geeky news, tech, gaming, television shows, movies, cartoons, comics, and more. So, get altered, get geeky with the Altered Geeks, every Friday on the GeekCast Radio Network.
What was that universal greeting again? Never mind, I remember.
Ba-weep, Grana! Weep, Ninny-bong!
Hey guys, it's Rodimus Primal, and be sure to check out my YouTube channel. Join me as I have Transformers discussions, retrospectives, toy reviews, and more. You can also follow me on Twitter at Rodimus Primal, as well as Facebook and Instagram at Rodimus Primal Show. Transform and roll out, and be sure to check out my content, till all are one.
Last big party of the summer, folks! Let's go out with a bang!
It's Showtime Synergy. The latest review podcast from the GeekCast Radio Network is here. So join TFG1 Mike, Nicole Hailstorm, and myself, Lady Rec, as we will be reviewing all 65 episodes of Joe and the Holograms in a 25-episode long podcast. You can find Showtime Synergy on iTunes and GeekCastRadio.com. We are the truly outrageous podcast that you want to be listening to.
Do you like retro cartoons? Then Saturday Morning Rewind is the podcast for you. Join them each month as they talk about classic cartoons and interview legendary voice actors like Jim Cummings.
I am the terror that flaps in the night.
Corey Burton.
Sometimes toys can be so funny.
Rob Paulsen.
Sure, Blaine, but how are we going to find chaps our size?
Nancy Cartwright and many more.
Eat my shorts.
So grab a bowl of Lucky Charms.
They're magically delicious.
Put on your hammer pants. Go to SaturdayMorningRewind.com. And be prepared to feel like a kid again. Once again, that's SaturdayMorningRewind.com. Saturday Morning Rewind was voted best podcast ever by its host, Tim Nidell. So it's gotta be good.
Hurry, Skeletor, hurry! I'm hurrying!
The Powers of Grayskull series has covered every episode of all of the Masters of the Universe cartoons except for two. Join Optimus Solo and TFG and Mike as they tell tales of Eternia, discover the myths of Etheria, become masters in space, evolve into the Masters of Grayskull, and finally reveal the revelation of Masters of the Universe. We'll also be finding out the origins of how guests got into or out of watching the Masters of the Universe cartoons, and so much more. You can find the podcast at GeekCastRadio.com and any podcatching client you choose to use. By the power and for the honor of Grayskull, we all have the power.
He-Man! Always He-Man!
Transformers! You are receiving a transmission from the Rod Pod. Upload pending.
Stand by for soundtrack transfer.
I am Maggie.
And I am John.
And we are trapped, hurtling through space in a ship shaped like Rodimus's head.
The ship, for reasons we haven't been able to determine, contains the entire run of the IDW Transformers Phase 2 comic, which chronicle the events following the end of the war between the Autobots and Decepticons. So we figure we may as well read them all in order and report our findings to you.
Stand by. Stand by.
Upload complete. Now.
The Rod Pod.
Look for us at marriedwcomics.libsyn.com, at iTunes, at Stitcher, or wherever good podcasts can be found.
So, till all are one.
Till all are one.
Till all are one.
We are back here on Geekcast Radio. This is episode 299. That's going to do it for us. Ryan is not on social media, so I will not be turning the microphone over to him while I go through the outro.
I mean, to be fair, you shouldn't have turned the microphone over to me in the first place.
You know,
I mean,
someone had to what it is.
That's true.
Ah,
I was surprised whenever he sort of did the comeback right now and he goes like, you know, we're episode 299. I thought he was just redoing the intro again. I figured for the third time he was somehow unhappy with it because he didn't insult me enough or something.
Oh, please. Whatever. Anyway. Thank you for listening to us here on Geekcast Radio. If you'd like to get in contact with us or leave feedback for the show, there are several ways to do so. Visit the website geekcastradio.com where you can listen to and comment on all of our content. You can find us on any podcatching client you choose to use. Follow us on Twitter at Geekcast Radio for the show. I am at TFG and Mike. Jesse, if you would like, what is your Twitter?
I only have to provide Twitter. I can provide anything else.
I don't know what else you have.
I still have a YouTube channel.
Okay. Well, there you go.
You can find me on Twitter. I'm at, so this is my real name, Jesse Early, Early with an EY. You can find me on YouTube at youtube.com/Matrix Prime. No underscore there. I put out random shit. No longer just Transformers stuff. Although, I've got my Transformers Lego Optimus Prime sitting next to me that I was going to do a review on, so that will still be coming at some point.
Yeah, I still haven't put mine together. He's still also beside me here.
So it's so good.
Cool. Very cool.
If you're interested in the review, once I do push it out, I recorded the entire process of putting it together in time lapse, and that will be in the review. So.
Very cool.
Snicked.
Well, it is Canada Day. Happy Canada Day, everybody. For now, I am TFG and Mike with...
I'm Ryan.
And I'm Jesse.
Thank you for listening. Until next time, if I make it to next time. Wow.
Yeah, that went well.